Thanks so much for joining us today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're going to start by taking a look at public health in Wisconsin with our next guest, Dr. Zorba Pastor. Zorba, retired physician, author, former host of our nationally syndicated WPR show, Zorba Pastor on Your Health. And he has a pretty new podcast.
Yeah, Stay Well with Dr. Zorba Pastor, and that's the name of the podcast. Anyone who looks at podcasts, Apple, Amazon, wherever they'll find it. And I'll tell you, the Stay Well with Dr. Zorba Pastor, we've got, you know, a couple of 100,000 downloads at this point, so things are going really well.
Ooh, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, going really well.
So what do they do to get to it?
Well, they go to wherever. First of all, if you've never, you know, gone to a podcast, just stop any teenager on the street or young adult and you say, how do I go to a podcast? And they open up wherever they get podcasts, either on their, which inevitably it's on your phone.
Yeah.
So usually it's on the Apple phone. All you do is put in podcast, put my name in, Dr. Zorba Pastor, and you'll download it. You can subscribe to it. It comes out weekly. It's a 20, 25-minute podcast. Then we've got quick updates whenever anything comes out of Washington. I usually have a comment on it, and then we move on from there. But the real issue is good curated medical information, just like I did for almost 35 years on Wisconsin Public Radio, taking medical information, putting it into an entertaining, digestible form so that people can understand it and figure it out for themselves.
And you do that very, very well. And
Thank
if you,
you
have a question
Thank
or comment for Dr. Zorba, you could join in too. The number 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. Love to hear from you. Last week, Governor Evers announced his administration's desire to join the Food is Medicine movement.
Right, right.
What's that all about?
Well, first of all, you know, if we look at food and we look at it in a broad way, which is rather interesting, we want to make sure that we eat the right stuff. So you've got ultra-processed foods. You sort of have four broad categories of food. You have no processed food, eat an apple. You have minimally processed foods, and we'll say take an onion and you saute it, we'll say in butter, olive oil. That's minimally processed. And then you've got the ultra-processed foods where there's so many things on the label that you can't even read it, let alone pronounce it. And there's so many ultra-processed foods out there because they become easy and convenient. You put it in the microwave, you eat it. And the fact is, these foods are not good for us. And so the food is medicine idea is, how do we now think of it as medicine and good for our health? The other problem is, more than half of our food dollar now is spent with prepared foods. So in Oregon, my small town outside of Madison, I counted the other day, and there are more than 25 places where you can get prepared food in this small town outside of Madison. And that includes Quick Trip, you know, the grocery store at Hy-Vee and everywhere else. And that's because people are not cooking for themselves. And if you cook for yourself, you know what's going in, and good food means you're going to stay healthy.
Makes a lot of sense to me. You know what? Dot in Chippewa Falls has something for us. Let's go there.
Oh, thank you so much. First of all, are you familiar with Dr. Phil's recipe? He worked with Dr. Oz. It is called Sugar Harmony. It is all natural, supposed to kill parasites in the pancreas, and it supports healthy blood sugar for people with type 2 diabetes because the root cause apparently is parasites. And his medicine kills the parasites.
Yeah.
Well, there are no parasites in your pancreas. And so when they actually say there are parasites in the pancreas, it's rubbish. There's no scientific evidence for that at all. And a lot of you bring up a really good point. There's a lot of rubbish out there that doesn't make sense that people then buy and spend their money on when really the governor's idea is food is medicine means go back to food. Go to your grocery store. Plentiful fruits and vegetables. 5 servings. Not a lot. There's not a lot of serving. The brighter the vegetable, the better the micronutrients in that vegetable. So a colorful plate filled with lots of vegetables. Olive oil on a salad is good, of course. If you're going to have a protein, the best protein, of course, is fish protein. That's really food is medicine. And the other stuff is save your money. Don't spend it on what Dr. Phil says and others says. And that's why listening to public radio is a great way to get that information. And that's what we're doing on the Larry Mueller Show. And actually, this is what I like to talk about on my podcast, Stay Well with Dr. Zorba Pastor. There's so much information on. It's very difficult sometimes to, sift and winnow the way we do things in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Dot, thank you for calling. Thank you. Appreciate it. Dennis and Custer has something. Let's go there.
Yes, Dr. Zorba, I have a friend that I'm watching die in front of my eyes.
Uh-huh.
Oh, 6 months ago, he couldn't keep food down, so mm-hmm. he's throwing up this food. And, of course, mm-hmm. this continued for 6 months. Mm-hmm. He's right now lost 100 pounds.
Wow.
He did have a mm-hmm. CAT scan mm-hmm. and a probe mm-hmm. in the stomach, which took some biopsies, 5 of them. They all mm-hmm. came back negative.
Oh, uh-huh.
The CAT scan indicated thickening of the walls or leathery walls of the stomach.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he's tried. Now, I think what he needs, but he won't spend the money or go, is a PET scan mm-hmm. if that could tell more definitively mm-hmm. what's going on. But he's down to about 140 pounds from 240.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And wow. I just don't know what to do uh-huh. with him.
Well, my suggestion in situations like that is not to do a PET scan, but to get a second opinion. I mean, we kind of don't just image, because that may give us the answer. And PET scans are really good for certain things, such as cancer, to determine if it's somewhere else. But certainly in a situation like that where you lose that much weight, getting a second opinion. I usually recommend getting a second opinion at least 100 miles away from you. Because you want to get a physician that doesn't necessarily know the group or the physician that you're working in, and then you're more likely to get a good objective, second opinion. And, University of Wisconsin, Mayo Clinic, great places in the Midwest to get a second opinion to find out what's going on. Something's going on, 100 pounds, a lot of weight, that's what he needs.
Boy, oh boy, I guess so. Dennis, thank you very much for calling. About a third of our Wisconsin adults have high blood pressure.
Right.
About 1 million of them are pre-diabetic. How do you make that connection between health and food to make more Wisconsinites healthier?
Well, first of all, one of the issues, we have in the state, I always make a joke that, when you cross the border from Illinois, the governor gives you 20 pounds and then you get an extra 2 pounds benefit a year. But we are a hefty state. So one of the ways is really begin to look at your food intake. And I often recommend to people, the way you get a handle on that is for 3 days, don't look anything up. Just write down everything that you're eating. That's all. Everything that you're treating. And then 3 days later, go to Google it, just put in, had this, had that, and the number of calories, and you will be surprised at where your calories are coming from. So, for instance, if you go to Subway, if I ask people, what do you think the most caloric sandwich at Subway is, they usually say the meatball, but in fact, it's the tuna, because tuna has mayonnaise. And that's where all the calories come from. And you think, oh, tuna, it's good, it's fish, which is true, but it's got a bunch of mayonnaise. And if we were just to cut down 200 calories a day, 150, 200 calories a day, that can make a big difference. And once again, there are a lot of other things we can do in terms of doing that. If you look at liquid calories, if you have 20 ounces of a Coke, you're getting 20 teaspoons of sugar. That's a lot of sugar. Nobody would have 20 sugar cubes. So you don't want to drink your calories. You want to eat your calories. You want to make them wholesome. You want to make them calories that are good. The best diet is the Mediterranean diet. And people will often say to me, what do you mean is a Mediterranean diet? Go, you can look it up on Wikipedia. There are a number of books, Mediterranean Diet for Beginners, that you can get on Amazon. And just begin to follow what they do around the Mediterranean Sea. You will lose weight and you will be healthier.
As you were talking, I was thinking about a couple of one research project, and this is years back, where they had people record what they ate, and this was going to be over, I forget the period of time. Anyway, they had to write it all down, what they ate. Mm-hmm. And then they had to come in and stay in the whatever,
in
wherever,
the lab.
In the lab. Mm-hmm. And they were then fed what they said they ate.
Uh-huh.
And they all gained weight. Because
they all gained weight. It's very funny. Well,
it goes to, I don't forget about that M&M that you ate.
That's right. That's because right. it's not that easy. It's not that easy to lose weight. So from a high blood pressure point of view, cutting down on salt, not getting rid of it because it's really hard to get rid of it, makes a difference. Cutting down on alcohol. You know, we're the number one state in the country when it comes to binge drinking, which is, you know, really something. And we drink too much alcohol, though there's a whole movement, especially among young people, to have less and less alcohol. And I just got back from a vacation, and you look at menus in restaurants now, and part of the menu will often say mocktails. And that was never a thing. Look back 5 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago. That was not on the menu because people are starting to think about alcohol. And that really is dropping alcohol, changing your eating habits, and, of course, exercising. That will lead you to a healthier life.
Cheryl in Berlin. Let's go there. Hi, Cheryl.
Yeah, hello. I'd like to know, do you think there's any real value in doing Tai Chi?
Oh, for sure. Tai Chi is great. Tai Chi is a good example of, you know, excellent exercise. When I think to my own, you know, I'm an old guy. I'm younger than you, Larry. But I'm an old guy. I'm 78, 78 and a half. And I think about what I used to do. I used to jog. I used to run. I used to do other things. Now my joints ache. And basically, I want to keep them limber. Tai Chi is great for balance. Like yoga, it's excellent for your joints. There is chair Tai Chi if you can't get around. And there is active Tai Chi. And Tai Chi is an excellent exercise at any age. And so the answer is yes. And exercise should be an important part of your staying well.
Cheryl, there you go. Thank you. Dan in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Dan.
Hi. So I recently heard about you talking about fish being the best protein. And we really try hard with our family to get fish from a sustainable source.
Mm-hmm.
We also eat a lot of fish from our local waterways. And so is there any other concerns that you might have with, like, mercury or sustainability with that?
Oh,
and
sure.
I just like to add that we add a lot of red meat from lamb.
Mm-hmm.
And what your thoughts are, you know, comparing grass-fed lamb and mm-hmm. beef in comparison to just regular store market beef.
Sure. So first of all, the mercury issue, you know, I don't know individual fish within Wisconsin that you're catching. There are mercury issues, and I would, you know, would say go to the DNR website or Google mercury, Wisconsin fish. That's what I would do. And look at the recommendations because they basically change year by year or every other year. And I would look at it from that point of view. We know that salmon, especially sustainable salmon, is good. I like to get salmon that's farm-raised. I think it's okay. I like to get farm-raised salmon in the U.S. because then I know it follows certainly U.S. standards. So I like to see where it's sourced, where it comes from. Salmon is really good. Herring is great. Pickled herring is something I really love.
I do, too.
I like pickled herring. Yeah, especially in sour cream. Well, anyway, that's something else. And then sardines are excellent. Sardines that are openly sourced are really good. So those are things to really look at. Lamb is considered to be red meat. It's excellent. It's delicious. And like other red meat, you have to look at the fat from that. And once again, you know, we don't have to throw out the baby with the bathwater. We can say, I'm going to have red meat. I'm just not going to have it every day. You know, my mother, when she would make something to eat for an evening meal, she basically had red meat almost every night. It wasn't, sometimes it was lamb, sometimes, you know, it was skirt steak, sometimes it was Swiss steak, but whatever it is, she thought that red meat was an important part of eating. The fact is, no, but you can eat it. And so lamb is really good, and but I don't think it's it's different than beef when it comes to a cholesterol point of view. Despite the fact that if you look at the new food pyramid that comes out from RFK, sort of an upside down pyramid, he also put in that you should cook with beef tallow, and I thought, where do you buy beef tallow in Madison, Wisconsin? And the answer is, I haven't answered that yet. So,
Dan, thank you very much for calling. And by the way, those DNR's advisories are pretty good, and they even go down to the level of the kind of fish.
The kind of fish and where.
Yeah, yeah.
Within the state.
And where they are.
And we like to eat our fish. We like to locally source and eat our fish. Just look at the advisory. And the issue with the advisory really has a lot to do with pregnant women more than others. So pregnant women and growing children, those are, you know, those are really where the advisories are most important.
Dr. Zorba Pastor, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at the health of Wisconsin today with our guest, Dr. Zorba Pastor. His podcast, new podcast out there, Stay Well with Dr. Zorba Pastor. Questions for him or comments, the number 800-642-1234. Send an email to talk@wpr.org. Cheryl in Iron Ridge, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I had a little trick because of losing weight that works very well. I came from the family of we love pasta.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And as you know, pasta is very high in carbs.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and bought packages of frozen riced cauliflower.
Mm-hmm.
And now when I make a Greek dish instead of the rice, I use the cauliflower.
Excellent.
When I make an Italian dish, I use the frozen cauliflower. And you know what? It tastes wonderful.
It does.
And it's filling.
Right. Yes. Rice cauliflower is excellent. It's just a good way to use a vegetable that really is good for you. And then you're also avoiding too much pasta, too much in the way of carbohydrates. So good for you. Yes, it's excellent. And people can buy it pretty much anywhere, in any major grocery store. And a lot of small grocery stores will have it in the frozen food section. So, and you can make it yourself. Also, there are ways to make it yourself. But I've done that. I bought the frozen stuff. Easier.
It's easier.
Thank you. Thanks for the tip.
Back to beef tallow for a second. Brandy in Lake Mills called to share that the conscious carnivore on the west side of Madison.
That is true. Right.
You can buy quality beef tallow.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And they're really quality. They're a quality company. Thanks for letting us know. Letting me know.
The Wisconsin Department of Health Services is looking for funding and training for a state officer to oversee food as training activities.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that program?
I'm not familiar with it, and I'm not looking for a job, if that's what you're, that's what you're asking. But it's just a good example of we've got to have more training. So how much, when I went to medical school, now that's back in the 70s, how much nutrition training do you think we got?
Probably nothing.
That's right. We really didn't get anything. That with the dietitians, you know, they were over in another building. Really didn't get anything at all. You know, they were given lip service for that. And I think part of the governor's idea of food is medicine and something that we have to do, certainly within the medical, and we've discovered that over the last certainly 10 and 20 years, is that we've got to pay more attention to what goes into our mouth, because that ultimately is producing a better body. And that is incredibly important. And often go into your doctor's office and they say, how's your diet? We talk about it for maybe 30 seconds or a minute.
Yeah.
And that's about all that there is. So that's really not giving it, it's giving it the short shrift, not giving it as much importance as it really needs.
Yeah. You can join in too. Number to call 800-642-1234 or email to talk@wpr.org. Yeah, I think that state officer, getting a state officer to oversee it if that happens, Wisconsin would be one of 10 states participating in the Food is Medicine state officer program.
You know, part of this also has to do, recently reviewed some issues that have to do with SNAP, you know, food stamps, yeah. supplemental, and looking at candy, soft drinks, and prepared desserts nationwide with SNAP. And that is roughly between 17 and 22% of the fund, of the money that goes into SNAP actually is what I would call sort of wasted calories. And so there's a movement among a number of states. Wisconsin right now at this moment is not part of that movement, to take those benefits and say, we want to use the SNAP benefits to encourage better eating. So why are we doing that for soft drinks, which are basically liquid Twinkies? But I think that's an important thing to people to realize, that when you have a soft drink, you're not really getting anything from it. It's a treat. When you were a kid, did you drink Coke and Pepsi very often?
No.
No. Wasn't it a treat?
It was
a treat. And it was treated as a treat, not something that we had at our meal. And I think that's important for everyone to think about.
Carlene in Brooklyn, Wisconsin. Your turn. Hi, Carlene.
Hi. This is a question for Dr. Zulk. I had a calcification score done like a year ago, and it was like 1,000.
Uh-huh. And this is a heart scan that you had? Is that what you meant?
Yeah. When I had to go in that machine,
right.
and it told you the score.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
And so that's pretty high.
Yes, it is.
And I have
heart
disease on both sides
yes.
of my family.
Right.
And so then they end up giving me a cardiac catheter done.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Good thing to do following that, right? So they did catheterization
right.
and look at the blood vessels around your heart.
Correct. And I have one that was 70%.
Okay.
And then the other three were like 20 and 30 and maybe 40.
Good.
Mm-hmm. And I always say to them about, I mean, they up my statin. Mm-hmm. So at least I used to take 20, now I take 40.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go any further because I know statins have a lot of side effects.
Mm-hmm.
But I've asked them before about having the calcification score done again, but they seem to think like, what's it going to show?
Right, and that's exactly right. You don't repeat it again because the calcifications will still be there. That means you've got plaques. You've got some little plaques that are little kind of bumps in your coronary arteries, and they're calcified, so they will be there. They don't disappear. I want to get to the statin issue for just a minute. Statins are great drugs. They really are great drugs. And I think if you're going to take them, you really want to take the statin in the highest dose that is going to work for you. I don't think there's going to be any difference for most people with side effect of a 40 or 80, unless you start to get muscle pain, which is the most common thing with the statin. So some people only tolerate a small dose, some a medium dose, some a higher dose. But if you were my patient, we had a coronary artery catheterization like that, I would say, well, you ought to try to get your cholesterol with a statin and with diet, with exercise, no smoking, you know, do everything you can do from a lifestyle point of view, and then take a statin to the highest dose that you can tolerate. That would be my recommendation. And frankly, that has been shown to be the most important thing. So no reason to redo the calcification score because it's not going to change significantly.
Carlene, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Roger emailed to say beef tallow is available in Costco. He also asked, what are your thoughts on the carnivore diet? Many doctors have YouTube channels about the healing benefits of a carnivore diet.
Many, yes. Well, there are many YouTube channels.
Yeah.
And I've got a podcast. Stay well with Dr. Zorba, Pastor, sort of. I guess I just say that, but I'm not selling it. You know, well, first of all, you know, there are a lot of carnivore, you know, this is a paleo diet. This is what the ancestors used to eat. The fact is, if you look back when there were 1 million humans on the earth or 2 million on the earth, they were actually more vegetarians than anything else because basically killing animals was really very, very difficult. And when they did, it was a high-protein diet for a while. And, of course, once you kill the animal, it doesn't last very long because the protein then, you know, depreciates. I think any diet that is, you know, for a little while, if you're going to take it, but why would you want to limit other foods? I think the best diet is a food with a variety of foods in it. And that's, to me, the diet. And that's why I keep on going back to the Mediterranean diet as being the best diet. The other diets can be useful for short periods of time. People often lose weight to go on the Atkins diet. They can kickstart their weight loss with that. But if you look at the number of people who stay on carnivore diets or Atkins diet, and you look at them 2 years later, roughly 90 to 95% of them are no longer following that diet because it's too restrictive. Yeah. Once you make a diet restrictive, people stop doing it after a while. Kickstart it with that. Go back to the med diet.
The food is medicine movement is, I think, different a bit from the Make America Healthy Again movement that our Health and Human Services Secretary,
yes,
Robert,
right.
How is it different?
Well, first of all, the Food is Healthy movement is using a more scientifically based approach to making our society healthier. If you look at Make America Healthy Again, it's more of a there are a few things. First of all, it's politics. You know, we don't have, I believe in science. I'm a doctor. I'm scientifically based. I want to take politics out of medicine. When I see patients, I don't ask them whether they're red or blue or green or yellow. I treat all patients exactly the same. And it's based on science. If you look at some of the stuff that's coming out of Washington, frankly, it's not based on science. Part of it is based on celebrities and what they think, and also I think people who have gone down the wrong way in terms of thinking about things in a non-scientific basis. That's kind of the best way to put it. Now, given that, the new food pyramid, which is upside down, was signed on to by the American Cardiology Association, by the American Pediatric Society, by a number of scientific societies, among other things, because of the limitation of fat and because of some of the other things that are in that new food pyramid. And also, looking at that, they're going after ultra-processed foods, which no one has ever done. And then look at something else. If you've ever looked at a food and you look at the number of calories, you take out, we'll say, candy or whatever it is, and tells the number of calories. Or you take out, we'll say, anything that's packaged. It'll tell you in big letters the number of calories. But in small letters, it'll tell you whether or not it's one or two servings. So you can pick up a package of pasta. It'll say 130 calories. And then look in smaller letters, it'll say two servings. So in other words, it's not 130 calories, it's 260 calories. Your mouth is wide open right now. You've never noticed that, have you?
I have noticed it. I was looking at
everything.
Candy bars.
Everything. Well, candy bars are, the big candy bars, the regular candy bars are roughly 210 calories. The big candy bars might say 210 calories, and then at small amounts, it'll say two servings.
Yeah.
So in other words,
who's going to eat a half?
Well, it's all because the large food companies, basically were part of how they're labeling food. And basically, there is now a movement in Washington to go after that and saying this is not really teaching the public things that they should have. So I was recently, the calories are listed for food. I was recently in the airport, in the Detroit airport, and I was looking for something to eat. And because they rearranged the calories much better, you can look and see the hamburger I was looking at was 900 calories. And I thought, that's half the calories I need for the day. Well, I can see that on the writing when I'm at a restaurant, but when I go and get packaged food, it's not obvious. We have to change that. And that's part of, I think, the movement that has to come out from the top down and from the bottom up.
Mm. Claire in Madison emailed to ask, and this goes back to the GLP-1 drugs. She's concerned these meds are coming across in the press as miracle cure-alls. Are we in danger of reducing the legitimate supply of drugs for people who really need them? And at the same time, are we encouraging potentially bogus knockoff industries?
Good questions. Well, first of all, one of the first drugs, Ozempic, when it first came out, which has been there for, well, the first drug in the GLP category was Victoza, and that has been around for about 20 years, but it did not cause any weight loss. Then Ozempic came out, caused weight loss, and of course, then it was difficult for the company Novo Nordisk to keep up with it. And the fact is, yes, a lot of money is now going into big pharma because the drugs are a big business and they cost a lot of money. On the other hand, the drugs are incredibly good. They're incredibly good for diabetes. They reduce the risk of heart disease and stroke. They really are, in many ways, miracle drugs. They really have a lot of application to them. And like the previous doctor that was talking about, you know, on Wisconsin Public Radio, there are side effects from these drugs long term, like any drug, that we have to be careful of. Side effects that may reduce the amount of muscle mass within your body and so on. Every drug has effects. Every drug has side effects. That's where you and your clinician have to sit down and say, is this drug right for me? And that's the best way for you to get information for you, because it should be tailored to you and your body.
Makes good sense. Dr. Zorba Pastor, our guest today, and you can join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at your health today with Dr. Zorba Pastor. His podcast, Stay Well with Dr. Zorba Pastor. And Michael had emailed this back to Beef Tallow for a minute. It's a saturated fat. Why is saturated fat recommended as a healthy choice? Michael wants to know.
It's not a healthy choice. That's it. Why? Because of rubbish that's going on. It is not a healthy choice. Why is it recommended? Because RFK believes that it's a healthy choice. There is no scientific evidence behind it. I'm a doctor. I believe in science. That's kind of where it's at. I don't think we should start to use beef tallow. Now, you may want to use it for something that you're making a special dish. Don't get me wrong. You know, I'm going to go back. I want to make this wonderful, Ella's Deli used to have this wonderful cabbage soup that is made with beef. I just bought the beef today. It's got lots of fat in it. I'm going to make this delicious soup. But it's not my regular soup thing I'm going to have all the time. So,
you know, there you go.
There's your answer. Thank you.
Jim in River Falls. Your turn. Thank you for calling, Jim.
Hi, thanks for the program. I just want to make a comment first that soft drinks, I think, are incredibly harmful to the American populace. And I spent time in Mongolia, and people there eat, you know, high-fat diets, but they're not eating the sugar content that we do. And, you know, just my dentist also said, you know, pop is perfect for dentists because it just keeps sugar on your teeth all the time. So you get dental disease and obesity, and plus all this plastic that goes into the waterways, you know, and microplastics. So I just want to make that comment. But I had a question about, I had a blood clot in January, and they put me in Eliquis for 3 months, and I'm just about done with that. I'm just wondering, is it advisable to just stay on a baby aspirin? I'm very active, and it was kind of odd, I think. I mean, I'd been doing a lot of driving a couple weeks before I had this blood clot.
So you had a blood clot in your leg? Is that where you had it?
Yes, in my leg. Yeah, it was distal. You know, near my tibia.
Well, first of all, when you get a blood clot in the leg, then the recommendation is that you be on a blood thinner for 3 to 6 months, depending on what those circumstances are. The new blood thinners, the one warfarin, that's what we used for many, many years. The new one's called DOAX, direct oral anticoagulants. Much easier, better, easier to take. Whether or not you should be on an aspirin, whether or not it reduces that, something you ought to sit down with your doctor. I used to recommend baby aspirin for everyone. And then the data came out and said, no, that's really not, you know, there's no evidence that it always works for everybody in every time. So I don't know whether or not in your circumstance, whether or not that is going to make a difference or not make a difference. But I think this is a perfect example of messaging your doctor to find out whether or not your clinician, whether or not they think that will do anything. And if they say yes, then the secondary question is, where's the evidence? Because we're always looking for, you know, science, the thing about science is it's always changing. I mean, it's never exactly the same because evidence keeps on coming out. For a long time, we said everyone should be on a baby aspirin. Then the data came out and said, no, you should be on a baby aspirin if you have certain risk factors. I don't know if a baby aspirin in your circumstance would reduce the risk of another blood clot. That's kind of a question that would be difficult to answer without looking at your chart.
Jim, give a conversation. Just send a note.
Yeah, just send. Well, that's a nice thing about my chart. And, you know, my chart, which is epic, you know, in Madison. Nice thing is you can send a note to your clinician, and they'll send you an answer as to what it is. So you're not sitting on the phone talking. It's much better to send a note and ask, should I be on an aspirin on a daily basis since I had it? And especially if you're otherwise healthy and you don't know, why did it happen to me? And sometimes things just happen randomly, and sometimes they happen with purpose. So part of the issue is, did you have a workup to see if you had genetic predisposition to a blood clot? Because that's often part of the workup for somebody who has a blood clot in their leg for no specific reason, to see whether or not you have a genetic predisposition to that. And if so, then you go down that discussion with a hematologist to determine what the long-term recommendations would be. So a bit of work there to get an answer for you specifically.
Jim, thank you for calling. Dwayne in Verona, we'll turn to you now. Thank you for calling, Dwayne.
Thank you for taking the call. I'm in the process of reading No More Tears by Gardner Harris. I'm wondering if the good doctor might comment on that.
I've not read the book.
It's on dementia.
Could I please ask you to read it?
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. I'll put it on my list, but thank you. So
the book is about this man's or this folk's journey with dementia.
Yeah. Well, my mother died of dementia in 1981. So my father kept her at home for 7 years. You know, she sort of fell off the cliff right away. I'm very familiar. She never really knew my kid's name. She didn't understand that. So I understand that on a personal basis. And my wife, Penny, had a memory loss as she was going downhill. So I find those books very difficult. I mean, yeah. I won't read them. I will not read the book about No More Tears because I've gone through that journey myself. And I think it's very important for people to understand that. And I think it's also important to look at books that you find that are useful for you, especially if you're dealing with problems like that. And it's important because often the people that you're close, that person is closest with, can then have burnout. And understanding the process can be extremely useful for that. And obviously, for this person, that was an extremely useful book. And I think it's good to put that out there for people to read and understand.
All right. Dwayne, thank you very much for calling. Kathy emailed to say her mother has blepharitis, B-L-E-P-H-A-R-I.
Oh, blepharitis.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, if you can pronounce it, Larry, you can be a doctor.
Blepharitis, all right. I was trying to figure out how it was pronounced.
That was good, though. You know,
it looked like that's the way it should be pronounced. Blepharitis?
That's what English is all about. And that's an inflammation of the eyelids. Caused by lots of different things. Can be caused by an allergy. Can be caused by cosmetics. That's sort of one of the common things that can be causing it. Can be caused by infections and inflammation. And that's where you need to have, often family doctors, we often take care of blepharitis. And if we can't figure out what's going on, then we send them to an ophthalmologist to do that. Sometimes it's also caused by if you look at your lower eyelid, it's sort of a gutter. And the tear, your eyes are tearing all the time. We've got to blink enough. Often we get blepharitis because we look at a screen and we don't blink, and because we get dry eyes. So often just moisturizing the eye can make a big difference, getting a liquid tear, which you can buy at the store, and any kind of a liquid tear, and then putting on a warm, moist mask. And what I recommend is you go and you get one of the liquid tear products. It doesn't have to say liquid tears. The ones that I'm using are slipping my mind. I can't remember which one I have right now at the house. But there are gels and there are drops, and you can ask your pharmacist which one they recommend. And then you buy a mask that you put in the microwave. And my my case, it's for 24 seconds, and it's warm. You put the liquid tears in your eyes, put the mask on top of it, let it sit there for 3 to 4 minutes. I do that while my coffee is brewing in the electric coffee pot. Do it twice a day, and that will often decrease blepharitis caused by dry eyes. And we don't realize as we get older, our skin gets dry, our eyes get dry, and when we look at a screen, which we all do, we don't blink as much. And so I'm not sure what her causes are, but many people who have blepharitis have dry eyes and just need to have a liquid tear type product.
You can join in too with your questions, 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. In his recent State of the State address, Governor Evers also announced that Wisconsin will join the World Health Organization's Global Outbreak Alert and Response Network.
Yes, yes. I think that's excellent. Well, if anyone who is aware of some of the politics that are going on in Washington is aware of the fact that we have stopped connecting with a lot of our global associates. They give us good information. And I think this then becomes a chance for the states to step up. I mean, we have 50 states, so we've got 50, you know, every state has health commissions, every state has a health policy, every state looks at what they recommend for immunizations. Right now, the immunization recommendation out of Washington is the same as Denmark. Well, Denmark has fewer people than the state of Wisconsin, and we are a very broad-based country with lots of environments that are different than Denmark, so they've reduced the number of immunizations they recommend. I think they're completely wrong with that. And so I think the state health commissioners like the state of Wisconsin saying we're going to join with the World Health Organization can step up and provide good information for the people in our state. So if the feds aren't doing it, then the states can do it. And maybe that's the reason why we have states that have their own health commissions, because they can say, well, we don't agree with the federal government, we're going to do our own. And let me tell you, the same is true, by the way, with a lot of organizations. If you look at ACOG, which is really the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists, and what they recommend in terms of screening for cervical cancer and breast cancer, and then you look at the American Cancer Society, what they recommend, and then you look at the U.S. Public Health Task Force, and they recommend, they're not all on the same page. They do many similar things, but they don't do them exactly the same. And that's where why you and your clinician can look at that and make the decision for you. But I love the fact that we're going to work as the state of Wisconsin, and I commend the governor for doing that.
Yeah, I think his direct quote was, public health isn't a partisan issue.
No, not at all. I mean, that's until recently, it was never a partisan issue. And frankly, it's not a partisan issue. It's not a partisan issue at all. And it's scientifically based. If you look at the fact that in 1900, the average age of death was 49. When FDR signed in Social Security, they signed it in at the age of 65, and most people were dead by the time they were 68. One of the reasons why Social Security is going bankrupt is we're living too damn long, and that's because we have good technology. And you remember when you were young, if somebody died in their 60s, you often said, well, they lived a good life.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody dies in your 60s, you go, what happened? And that's a difference because we have great technology. We have immunizations that have protected us from a variety of diseases. We've got statins. We treat high blood pressure. We don't smoke cigarettes. If we're good, we drink less alcohol, lots of lifestyle things. And all of these are scientifically based, and that's why we're living longer and we're healthier when we're older.
Darren from Kenosha emailed to ask if there is a difference between, this is, now we're getting into sugar here a little bit, mm-hmm. between real sugar and high fructose corn syrup.
Mm-hmm. Well, there may be a difference. It turns out high fructose corn syrup is associated, among other things, with gout. And beet sugar does not appear to be associated with gout. So there may be something about high fructose corn syrup. He's got a very good idea. that may be something that actually even addicts us to our sweet tooth. I don't really know, but it is definitely a different sugar product. It's not exactly the same. If you look at the benzene rings that are associated with that, it's an organic product. And so that product may be different. Among other things, there may be a difference in taste. You know, so if you go out to soft drinks, if you look at Coca-Cola, some of it will say made with real sugar. But high fructose corn syrup is easier to manufacture, and that's why it really has taken over. And yes, it may be different. Now, that doesn't mean sugar is good for you. Don't get me wrong. It doesn't mean that 12 ounces of a soft drink with white sugar is the same as good for you and 12 ounces with high fructose corn syrup is bad for you. It still is sugar. But yes, there is a difference between them, and it may be that one is more addictive than the other. Very good points. We don't know the full answer to that.
He said he ate real sugar, and when he was a kid, and there were very few overweight children. That was just
Yes, that is true. And maybe that's part of it. The other part of it is we used to go outside and play all the time. Yeah. We exercised more. There were fewer calories. There wasn't ultra-processed food. So it's not quite as simple as sugar. But, yes, we didn't weigh nearly as much. That is correct.
Tessa in Bayfield emailed to ask, wants you to talk about what makes up a portion of the size of fruits, veggies, and protein. You know,
First of all, a good thing to do is Google it to look at it. That's one way to sort of look at it. So a portion of size, you know, I'd have to look exactly. You know, first of all, I believe that if you're going to have oranges, you should have an orange and not have orange juice, because then you get the pulp from the orange and you're getting more fiber, and it digests differently in your body. It doesn't spike the blood sugar that orange juice will do that. That's part of it. It's surprisingly small amounts, and only 40 to 50% of the population in Wisconsin does that. So I can't really do chapter and verse and exactly what it is, but it basically is sort of a handful of beans. Is a portion of beans. Handful of green beans would be one portion. But Google it and look at it that way, and visually then try to look at that. You know, before the upside-down food pyramid, the idea was a plate. If you remember, you know, there was the food pyramid, there was the plate, and the plate showed you how much should be on there for fruits and vegetables. So
I want to go back to alcohol for just a minute, because there's a gal by the name of Kaylee Dagey, who's a graduate student at UW-Milwaukee, she's in their Master of Social Work, was writing about communities making it easier places to be sober.
Yes. Well, that's really important, because a lot of people like to go to a bar and have a good time.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we have non-alcoholic bars? And maybe we will start to have that. You know, non-alcoholic beer, you know, I've had the NA beers like Athletic, and they taste really good. So maybe we'll be seeing in the future that there'll be NA bars where there will be mocktails, there'll be non-alcoholic beers. And there certainly are non-alcoholic nights that younger people are beginning to kickstart with that. And that is a good idea, because we associate alcohol with being together and having a good time. Certainly in the state of Wisconsin, that's part of it. And she is exactly right. We should have that. And frankly, we're a capitalistic society. If somebody has an NA bar and it starts to make a big dent and it starts to be popular and you have music and other things, you better believe that the Tavern League is going to be on that and say, you can have a tavern without alcohol, right?
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. Why not have a tavern without alcohol? It's having a good time getting people together, and she has a very good point.
Very good point. And she actually noted half a dozen places around the state that are doing pretty well.
That's doing pretty well. Half a dozen is a tiny beginning within the state of Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a beginning. And that's how things change. They change with that. As long as you can see that you can start a tavern, which basically is an NA-type tavern, and you can make a living with that, people are going to start to do that.
Thinking way back to a tavern that opened here in Madison area that was a non-smoking tavern.
Right. That's right. And it was a shock. That's right. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? Exactly. Oh, man. Exactly.
Dr. Zorba, it's always a pleasure. You're going to be back again, and we'll do this all over again.
I am. Thank you so much. And thanks for prompting my podcast, Stay Well with Dr. Zorba, Pastor. I love doing that. I love helping people. And thank you, Larry. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Dr. Zorba will be back, and we will talk with him again fairly soon, as a matter of fact. Looking forward to that. Thank you for listening. And I hope you'll stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News. I'm Larry Mueller.